Welcome back to Shoujo, your favorite anime podcast. Hopefully, totally mine, but we've got me, Sarah, introducing Joe to Shoujo anime. I'm your guys' guide and the veteran viewer of Shoujo anime, and Joe is a newcomer to the genre, not having been the targeted demographic at the time that a lot of these came out, so... But here we are introducing him and hence showing Joe Shoujo. What's up, Joe?
Not much. How's it going for you?
Good. Let's see. What have I? I feel like I've been more work mode this week. Try to think of anything I've done in my free time. I beat Star Wars Outlaws. And.
Oh, okay. How was that?
So. It was fine. I think, I don't know if you get this way, but like when I start a game, I'm in the midst of it and I know there's a lot more game to come. I'm like a lot more like high opinion of it. And then once I know it's coming to an end and I'm like, okay, this is the entirety of the experience, then it's like my perception of it changes a little. Like that definitely happened with Dragon Age Veilguard, but like where it's like, okay, now I know this is all the game has to offer versus earlier in the game. It's like, oh, it could get better, or I'm imagining what's going to happen. And then when it doesn't meet those expectations, then it's like, oh, okay, it was good, but not, you know, could have been better kind of thing.
Okay. Nothing blew you away.
Well, like, right. There's the faction management elements, which in the end don't really amount to much. Like they don't really have an impact at all. I didn't watch the marketing for this game, but I'm assuming they were like really hyping up that aspect probably, and so people who were like more tuned in with what the game was going to be probably had more disappointment. But I enjoyed it. It, you know, it wasn't like overwhelming open world stuff, which is better for me. Let's see, watching some more Insecure, which I think I mentioned in the past, but it's like an HBO show with Issa Rae, kind of depicting like, I think just, you know, being an adult woman or Black woman in LA and kind of managing relationships and work and just life satisfaction and stuff like that. And she's pretty funny. I hadn't seen her in anything up to this point, so I've been enjoying that show. It kind of is like, it's almost like the Doom Scroll, where you get stuck watching it and you just are like so entranced that I don't realize how much time has passed. Let's see. Doom Scroll.
I know you're calling it a Doom Scroll, but that assumes that like things are getting worse. You're like spiraling.
Well, it basically just means you're like stuck in the, like you can't get out. You know, you just get like entranced by the, I don't know, the reels or whatever of a social media app. And it's just kind of the like where I'm just so zoned out watching it that I'm not paying attention to anything else really. So it can like steal your time away if you get snared. And yeah, I think I'm going to play Life is Strange Double Exposure, which I dropped once Dragon Age came out. So get back to that. I tried to watch the Haikyuu movie because that's like they didn't make another season, but they made like a movie to end the story. But like the art style is different. It's like not it like I what was like, mean? Oh, I can't do this. Well, it like doesn't look.
I'm gonna look it up.
Like I can tell the characters are the same. You know, I can tell who's who, but like the art style is very different, and I don't think it's in a better way. Like maybe it's smoother or something, but I like the style of the show more than what they did with the movie. It's like,
is it called, freaking me out. I'm sorry. Is it called Haikyuu the Dumpster Battle?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's distinctly different and I don't like it.
I mean, it definitely looks different. I'm trying to like, everything looks a little too crisp, maybe.
Yeah, it's, I don't know.
Like I'm looking at screenshots.
I prefer the lower budget, like, I guess.
It's like there's more line work or something.
Yeah, I just am so particular. I guess I don't know because I just binged basically all of the show, and then to jump to that, it's jarring. So we'll see. if I ever get back to that, but
that always is kind of weird.
Like, when, yeah, like,
a show does a movie, but like, because it's a movie, they have a bigger budget, so they like do different animation stuff, but it looks off because you're so used to seeing it in a certain way.
Yeah, I guess, for example, with Demon Slayer, you said that production studio like dumps a bunch into the first season and makes it look good. So after the first season, they had a movie, so it felt more seamless, yeah, between the two. But yeah, this one, there was a big gap of time between the show ending and this. I don't know why they didn't, because it's like also like a weird jump, because the season or the show ends at like, oh, we're going to nationals or something. You know, we just beat the big dog in our prelim thing. But then the movie starts immediately to like being in a match with like this team that's been kind of your rival, but you've never played an official match against. So we like didn't get the like intro to the whole new tournament and like any build up. And like, I don't know if this is like just a match or if this is the last match or anything like that. So it just felt very strange. I mean, I did not watch enough to like see if they explain it after the fact, but.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
Yeah. How about you though, Joe? What have you been up to?
I've finished several anime series. Yesterday I finished watching Ranma One Half, the remake, the 12 episode remake.
12 episodes, that's it?
That's all they have so far.
It's so weird that shows, because that's an older show, so like the old format, I'm thinking it's a lot.
It has like 300 episodes or something in the old one. Yeah.
What does it end on?
It ends on shampoo like leaves or something. Like they kind of deal with like the first round of that, of her.
I'm trying to remember. Is Goose a character introduced yet? Okay, nope, never mind. What did you think of her?
Shampoo? I don't like her very much. She's kind of annoying.
Yeah, she is a lot.
She has a cool design, though.
Yeah, I feel like I'm trying to think if I watched. I must have watched it and subbed when I first watched it in middle school. But like, I don't know. I think I remember liking how she said Ranma, like Ranma.
Because she's
extra
supposed to be Chinese.
Uh huh.
Like, supposed to pronounce things with a Chinese accent, although the Chinese, when she speaks Chinese, my friend was like, this is really bad.
Oh, yeah.
You know how like they'll speak English and it's really like not good. It's like that, but it's Chinese also. Uh-huh. So it was funny. I mean, I tended to like Ranma. I like the parts where it's just like you have to do different goofy fake combat sports, and I don't like the later skating. It went on. Yeah, like you do like an ice skate or you do like a floor gymnastics
turn
fight.
Turn it
like
into that, some kind of martial art. Yeah.
Yeah, that part is pretty goofy. I do like that part. I wish Akane got more to do. She kind of doesn't get anything to do like later in those last couple episodes, which is a bummer. It's pretty good. I tend to like it pretty well. I could see how you could easily make this into like a long running series by just having more of those kinds of things, which is pretty goofy and fun. So that's my thoughts about
Ranma.
Yeah,
the thing about Ranma is so many characters come and go, right? Like the ice skating where it's like, if I remember correctly, each of the other pair is slightly interested in Ranma and Akane.
Yeah.
So it's like almost kind of always like happens. There's a lot of that just repeatedly.
Yeah.
And then like, you know, relationship growth between Ranma and Akane kind of peppered throughout. Did you like Ryoga?
I appreciate how they do nothing to make this guy more likable. Like they don't try to do any, they just like do the Vegeta thing with him where it's just like, he's just going to hang around and we're going to like him, even though he doesn't do anything different.
He gets lost a lot.
He gets lost a lot. Yeah, he's got the Zoro problem. he's fine. I like him. Okay.
I guess would this have come out before One Piece?
When did the manga come out?
I don't know, but maybe it's the Ryoga thing that Zoro took.
Let me think. I'm assuming getting lost is not like, that's probably predates it.
Yeah.
Ranma One Half came out in 1987. They've started the original run.
One Piece has been around for quite some time, though.
One Piece first chapter was released in 1970 or 1997.
So Ranma came first.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Although I feel like they would get old. I feel like the formula could get old.
Crazy how much one encounters hot and cold water, don't you think? Like,
oh yeah, that part's goofy. Oh yeah, I guess if you don't know what Ranma One Half is, the premise is that there's a guy who's like a mixed martial artist guy, just like doing whatever, and he is supposed to get engaged to this girl, Akane, to like save her dojo somehow. It's like kind of hand waved away why that needs to happen. I don't really remember.
I feel like it's basically just like
they have like Ranma's an arranged marriage.
Dad and Akane's dad are like bros, and so they're like, let's just like maintain the bro-ness by promising our kids are going to get married before they're even born, maybe just so we still have a reason to meet up, even if one of us has a dojo and the other is just randomly training in places.
Anyway, the thing with Ranma is that him and his dad went to like some weird cursed pools in China somewhere while they were training in China, and they fell into it, and you fall into the pool, you become the thing that died in that pool if you get submerged in cold water, and then you turn back into yourself if it's warm water. So his dad falls into one that makes him a panda, and he falls into one that makes him a girl. And so that's the joke comedy thing, is that anytime he gets splashed with cold water, he becomes a girl. And anytime he gets splashed with hot water, he turns back into being a guy.
It'd be a fun cosplay to do where you're both Ranma and then, that sounds complicated. Panda. Well, two people together, like if one's a guy and one's a girl, and you're each.
I see.
Well, you're, yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be fun.
Yeah. So I watched that. Yeah, it's pretty goofy. I had a good time with it. I also watched Aim for the Ace 2, Die Buster, the sequel to Gun Buster, the thing I talked about last time. 6-episode OVA made by Gainax as their like 20-year anniversary of the studio thing. Made by people who are the different people than who made the first one, because it was like 15 years later or something. It's made by the Fooly Cooly people, which if you look at any images of Die Buster is immediately obvious. It's also way more like out there anime, like, the world is in like chaos and we're like flying around in these big mechs, which are actually just people, robot things. And like stuff is just kind of not making like, you know, Gunbuster is much more of like a sci-fi thing where like people are riding around in ships that like make logical sense. You know what I mean? Like this is the mech you're in. It moves like this because you pull the arms and stuff like that. And, you know, you're traveling in space. So space travel, if you travel really fast, it dilutes time and space and all that other stuff. It's like really about that stuff in a much more sci-fi way. Die Buster is way more anime, just being like, oh yeah, you're in a big mech and you can shoot a beam that like freezes the air in space to -9,000 degrees or something. Like it's really goofy. I don't like it as much. I don't feel like thematically it really pulls off the same thing that Gunbuster does. I think Gunbuster is like better thought out and looks better. It's also way hornier because it came later on. This is like an early 2000s show. So the fan service is there because we are in a bad age of anime, I've decided, based on that stuff. But it still looks pretty fun. I like it. Like it does the stuff that Fooly Cooly does, but it also doesn't have all of the stuff with Fooly Cooly I don't like as much. So I tend to like it pretty well. So there's like cool scenes. It's also like it feels a lot like Gurren Lagann, if you've ever watched that.
Like
it's doing a lot of that. Like people are striking these big poses. They're just like saying how you should believe in yourself while like things explode. You know what I mean? Like it's very much that's what's going on. Which, you know, I tend to like. This came out in 2004 to 2006. When did Gurren Lagann? Gurren Lagann came out
after then
in 2007. So this, I feel like this inspired some of that stuff, maybe. Anyway, 6 episodes, easy to watch.
Mm-hmm. Like when I think of fan service in anime, it's always like the pervy stuff. But is there like other methods of fan service that would. I'm trying to think of fan service in other mediums that I'm into.
So, yeah. So I usually think of like horny stuff as fans, like when I talk about anime fan service specifically, because they do a lot of that stuff, you know, like really male gazy camera shots, just like pointless nudity, that kind of thing. But there's also some fan service that it's like, oh, here's the thing from Gunbuster One. Isn't that cool? And it's like, not really. So like anything that just like appeals to fans in a shallow way, I also consider fan service. The new Star Wars movies do this a lot, right? When they're like, oh, here, like Lando Calrissian's here for no reason. Fan service. Like that's the other kind of fan service.
Mm. So mostly like no one who does like fan service is for a very specific person who, because I feel like fan service never really like makes things better.
I feel like it's derogatory as a term, right? Like you wouldn't, if something was good, you wouldn't call it fan service, right?
Yeah.
You would just think this is a cool thing that
targeting
happens.
A very, maybe it's just like, I don't know, the like why target those people versus other people, but I guess, I don't know, maybe they just saw a lot of body pillows and like,
I mean, that's exactly why they put the horny stuff in there, is because like this is who they sell to, and you know, men will buy stuff if there's naked girls in it, basically. Like that's the calculus. It's very not complicated. This is not a complicated thought process.
Yeah.
I don't even know if that's true. Like that's the assumption. I don't know if that actually pans out all that much, to be perfectly honest with you. But that is the, you know, I can figure the executive saying that. That's kind of like what was with Game of Thrones, though, right? Same thing happened there, where it's like you have to put a certain amount of violence and nudity in there, like each season that was like mandated by the people above, so they did that.
Yeah, I guess
how
so.
Stuff gets made.
Something I just remembered to mention that we'll look forward to in the future is that me and Jenny, friend of the pod, who was on for a couple episodes of Kimi ni Todoke coverage, are going to see Sailor Moon live.
Oh,
I guess like a musical or a play or something.
Is it the 2.5D musical?
I don't know. But I'm like, I've watched like the first season of Sailor Moon, just the normal one. So It'll be interesting. I'm sure it'll be fun. I'll definitely wear my shoujo shirt.
Nice.
Get the word out to the berry people. Yep. But yeah, so look, me and Jenny hanging out. Look at me.
Yeah, no, it's good.
Friends to do stuff with.
Also, I'm not done. I watched one more anime.
Sorry.
That I finished. I'm just letting you know. I finished Mobile Suit Gundam the 08 The Mess Team. A 12 episode OVA from 1996 to 1999 about what if we put Gundams in a Vietnam War setting, and it wasn't that good.
That's crazy.
So far, the Gundam OVAs really follow this thing where it's like, it looks great. Like, you want to see the mechs do some mech stuff. There's like an incredible mech fight in this one with a goof. There's a mech called a goof, and it's really fucking cool, and it's incredible. And so the action and like the aesthetics are really good. And like, you want to see like how it's like, oh man, sand is getting caught in the gears of this mech, and it's like slowing us down, like all that kind of stuff, you know, cool stuff like that. But when it comes to like characters or stakes or, you know, relationships, the OVAs don't do a very good job, with exception of War in the Pocket. And I feel like the answer is War in the Pocket is 6 episodes, and Oh Wait, the Mess Team and like Stardust Memory are like 12, and that's too many episodes.
Like, what is the longest OVA ever, and why not just make it into like, well, because I guess what with OVA, then it's like, disclaimer, it's not a full show, so if it sucks, it's fine. Or
OVA is just like a different, they don't air it on TV, you just buy it.
Like, so long for 12 episodes. It's
12
crazy.
Episodes is like a weird, it's like kind of a weird length for an OVA. I feel like normally they're pretty short. Like normally they're like 6 or like 8 or something, or like 4, right? Well, it's kind of long, but I guess you could do that for certain franchises. I mean, Gundam's huge at this point, so I guess you could do that.
Yeah.
That being said, it's like, I think 12 episodes is actually a bad length for a show, I've decided.
Well, and that's the new format. So I wonder what happened to make, because it used to be 26 was the number and now it's cut in half. Is that like a like airing thing in Japan, like they wanted to reduce or free up the airway? I don't. Yeah,
like, I just assume it's interesting some, to find it's out some why. Corporate bullshit, like in how Netflix doesn't renew things, because if you renew something, you have to renegotiate your union contracts and you have to pay people more and stuff like that, so they just cancel everything after like one or two seasons, you know what I mean? Like, I think it's probably just some bullshit like that, because that's just kind of the world we live in now. But that being said, I think 12 episodes is bad because it's not enough to do any of, like, it's too long to do something really tight, right? Like, 6 episodes is about the length of a movie, you know, so that's probably like 2 hours, and in 2 hours you kind of have an idea of what kind of story you can tell. And also, if you have like 26 episodes or like 50 episodes, you could do totally different things, right? And you can have a couple bad episodes in there, but it's fine because there's so much other stuff. You have so much time to like play with other things that there's normally some stuff in there. 12 episodes is like, I watch these OVAs and it feels like 4 or 5 of the episodes are just kind of like filling time. And then they're just kind of rushing to do the story at the beginning of the end. It's like slightly too long. For like a really condensed thing, and not long enough to do like a more long form thing, right? Where you can like set things up week to week. So I think it's a bad number. I think 12 is a bad number to have an OVA series. At least that's been true so far in Gundam.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if I don't think I've ever watched OVA. I know there's like one show that we'll cover at some point, which I guess we can. Fushigi Yugi has OVAs, so maybe we'll watch that. But I guess I've always just dismissed it.
Some of them are really good, like the OVAs and Vodums are incredible. They're like, they add so much to like my like read of the show, but a lot of the times
are they harder to, I imagine OVAs would be harder to get a physical copy of.
Yeah, I bought like a thing that like a big box set that includes all of the OVAs and movies and stuff, but yeah, they're usually harder to get, like stream and stuff like that, because they're licensed differently. But they can be good. I mean, sometimes they're really good, you know? I don't know.
Maybe I will know at some point.
Yeah.
Once I watch one.
I don't think there's been like any stuff so far that we would have watched that would have like that would have come up. But we also haven't watched any series that have like movies or anything yet. So
no.
At some point we probably get to
Cardcaptor Sakura. Ooh. Oh God. I'll be so excited when that day comes.
But yeah, so that's what I've been watching stuff.
Nice. Good. Watching the anime is good if you have an anime podcast.
It is.
Yep, yep.
I'm now moving on to Gundam X.
Oh, good Lord. Is there an end? Or by the time you catch up, so many more Gundam shows will have come out.
I mean, there will be an end. Eventually, I'll catch up to present day.
There's so many.
They definitely can't make Gundam as fast as I can watch them. So okay. I will catch up.
At one point, this podcast will not be half Gundam.
It's not half Gundam. I barely talk about it.
Oh, goodness. Speaking of the podcast, do we want to get to our coverage today?
Yes.
This show, I'm glad we did 2 episodes because it's like the number of notes I'm taking is a lot.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, oh, we can move. After I watch these 2 episodes, I'm like, I really want to watch the next one. So maybe we can move up to 3. Yeah. And then I started taking the summaries and I'm like, oh, yes, I've hit 22, like 100 words. OK, maybe not.
Yes. Yeah, I'm excited to talk about it.
Yes. So this time we watched episode 3 and 4 of The Roses of Versailles. I'm going to start off with voice actors, which is kind of disappointing. So the voice actor for Oscar, Francesca Di Giorgese, with her whole ass name, the only character that has a whole ass name, is Reiko Tajima, who is Queen Emeraldes in Galaxy Express 999, a show I've heard of but don't know anything about. I know it's the one with the space train.
I saw the ads for it on Funimation DVDs a long time ago.
Yeah, it's like one of those, like, they printed a lot of like disc copies of it because like they always have it. And I see it. It looks pretty and it's probably good. I just have never watched it. She's also the voice of Sandra in Space Adventure Cobra, which is another old thing that I think I've seen clips from that seem cool. And that's basically it. I mean, she's in some other stuff, but I couldn't recognize any of it, what it was.
Mm.
So this is her biggest role in a show, it seems like.
Do you think, because when I'm watching it on Zumo Play, and the full name is like Lady Oscar the Rose of Versailles, do you think they just like changed, is that like the full name of the show, or they just like changed it to be more identifiable or something?
There's a movie. The thing that gets messed up is that I don't know when stuff got released in the West, because there's a movie that's directed by a French director that I think did get released in like the West or like France or something like that. That's called Lady Oscar. And then maybe the show got ported over. You know what I mean? So like, okay. I don't actually know the sequence of, because then it would have made sense to call this Lady Oscar the Rose of Versailles, because it's like people already know what that is. So I don't actually know. And that's what makes it complicated. Gotcha. But the... it's called Rose of Versailles. Like the, like, I mean, you know, the first title card thing, that's what it says.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
But yeah, it's also called Lady Oscar.
We got to do the narrator's voice actress too.
Oh yeah.
That lady is so dramatic. Her lines are so dramatic.
Hell yeah, dude. The line reads so good.
Uh-huh.
The voice of Andre, who's just Andre, no last name, is Taro Shigaki, who plays the prince in the 1975 anime The Little Mermaid, who's directed by the guy who directed The Fist of the North Star, which is very funny. The like extremely violent.
Yeah, very different ends of the spectrum of what you could be directing.
Yes. Taro Shigaki is also the prince in the 1981 anime Swan Lake. He plays princes. That's about it. There's some other stuff.
Didn't recognize him. So we're just doing a lot of Disney versions of things.
Yeah, like another pass at it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Although I don't think Disney ever did a Swan Lake.
Yeah. Huh? Well, I don't. Was it Disney maybe? Something? There's one.
No. You're talking about the Swan Princess. Has, like,
Odette. Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
That is not a Disney movie.
Okay. That prince is a punk, and I hate him.
I think that's Don Bluth? No.
She was so pretty.
Who did that?
And he was insufferable.
It is New Line Cinema Distribution. I don't know. It was made by somebody else. It's not a Disney thing.
Gotcha. Never mind then. Continue.
Oh, but it's made by a former Disney animator. That's why it kind of looks the same, I think.
Gotcha.
Anyway. The Rose of Versailles episode 3 is called Sparks Fly at Versailles. We open on May 16th, 1770. Marie and Louis are getting married. When signing the marriage contract, Marie's quill drips some ink, and everybody's horrified that there's a stain on the marriage contract, as that's a horrible omen, as the OP plays.
This is probably the best opening we've had.
It's so good. It's like,
it's very good.
They're just at this thing, and then she drips ink, and everyone's like, oh no, this is a horrible omen.
They have like the jarring sound to indicate something bad has happened, and then we see why everyone, because I feel like it's like, we'll see later where she like sees someone and she's like, and you haven't even seen what she's reacting to really yet.
Yeah. The drama's really good.
Yeah.
I like how they do that scene, especially over something so like kind of mundane. Let's see. So when we jump back in, we cut to Granny telling Oscar to mind her manners today, as it will be Marie's first appearance at court. Andre's like, chill out, Grandma. Oscar's going to be fine. And Granny yells at him to call her Lady Oscar. Andre and Oscar mount their horses, and Andre jokes that Oscar has become very popular at court after rescuing Marie, especially among the ladies.
You know what I don't love is that she's just ignoring poor Granny, and Granny's old, but she's running after her. And so she's having to exert her old body, and Oscar can't be bothered to just like listen to what she has to say and go. She just ignores her.
I mean, it's not her Granny.
Well,
it's like her servant.
Probably the person who raised her the most, I would assume, or very involved in her childhood.
I don't know, because we get an appearance by somebody who I thought was dead in this episode.
I know. Okay, we'll talk. We'll get to it. Oh my god. So okay. Funny.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was crazy. Cut to the palace where several ladies are admiring Oscar. They try to flirt with her, but she brushes them off, and they lament that they wish she was a man. Wait, jump to okay. Marie. Yep.
I was gonna say, once I saw that, I like was Googling what was like the at the time of the French Revolution, the like mindset of like sexuality in France at the time. And it seems like they're a lot more open minded than other places at the time.
Yeah, so
the I was French, like, I feel know. Like, yeah, because they seem all very much more open with like voicing attraction to same sex and stuff that.
Oh, would yeah. Have been
blasphemy somewhere else.
No, yeah. It's definitely, you know. They're definitely getting at it. We jump to Marie Antoinette. She learns that since she's married to the crown prince and that the current queen is dead, she's now the highest ranking lady at court. As such, it's custom that she must greet all of the women before they can speak to her. Marie is amazed that she's top dog now.
I'm very confused by what it is she wants. Or, like, because she seems so, like, you know, La La Land at some points, but then she's like, oh man, I'm the best. This is awesome. Like, everybody bow down to me.
Mm-hmm.
I guess maybe just growing up royal, you just.
Yeah. I mean, this is, I think she's that. Like, she's like, oh, I am like the top dog at court, which is crazy because like before it would have been her mom who's the empress and then all of her sisters. So she's probably pretty low down before.
Mm, that's true. It just seems like she's such a space cadet that she wouldn't care about that stuff. But I guess.
No, I think this is the only thing she cares about because she's.
Okay.
she does not come across very good in these episodes.
The cat.
Oh, this cat she has like, yeah, she has like a tiny a kitten. Cat.
It's so cute.
Uh-huh.
Could it be the cutest cat ever? Maybe. It's so cute.
Uh-huh.
And then the maid or whatever scruffs that little guy and then chucks it. Poor little cat.
Yeah, he's a tiny kitten. Let's see. Marie makes her appearance.
Sorry. Also, sorry.
No,
also,
go for it.
When she's like thinking about this stuff and then like the camera angle is like from the ground, and then she looks like an Amazon woman. Like, she looks so tall in this shot.
Dude.
I guess.
She's on top of the world. Crazy. She's the big dog now, and they have to make her look big. She's the lady at court.
So tall.
it's pretty God, funny.
Sorry.
By the way, like, at this time, the queen's been dead for 2 years.
Mm.
Yeah, 2 years. Let's see. Marie makes her appearance at court. Everybody admires Maria as she is eating it up. The party starts and Marie asks Louis the 16th to dance. He says he doesn't dance though, and then tells her that she's free to find another partner, which is like, I don't know.
Yeah, that seems like, is it gonna be frowned upon if she goes dance with someone else that isn't, or at least not after dancing with him first?
Yeah, I don't know. He's just like, I'm not gonna do it. And it's like, okay, but like, could she find, who would she find? That seems like, as we're gonna find out, everything she does is gonna be extremely political. Or interpreted as political.
Well, I would think like he would have been taught like, oh, it doesn't matter if that's what you want or not, but like you have to give this to her. This is like all she has, at least like at least dance with her. Just like a sad sack of a man.
He comes across as a total loser.
yeah. We learn about his hobbies later.
Yeah, though. We learn about how weird he is a little bit. Marie scans the room and sees Oscar and Andre. She walks over to Oscar, but on the way notices a woman glaring at her. Maria's like, who could this be? As several other court ladies notice the interaction. Marie ignores
that
her.
Lady? Hot. Uh-huh. Sorry. Oh, yeah. I was like, oh, she's hot.
Ooh,
yeah.
Madame Dewberry. Ooh. I'm having to fan myself over here.
Yeah.
Marie ignores her and walks over to Oscar. She greets Oscar and the court ladies gossip about how Marie greeted Oscar before anyone else. Marie asks Oscar who that woman who's glaring at her is, and Oscar tells her that that's Madame Dewberry and Marie shouldn't get involved with her. Marie doesn't like her attitude though and storms off in a huff, and she's followed by several women. Oscar leans over to Andre and is like, oh look, Marie's aunt-in-laws are here who hate Madame Dewberry, gonna go talk to her. And Andre is like, I don't think this is gonna go well.
Yeah, I like seeing I kind of like seeing her in this more, like, because she doesn't talk very much. So I feel like
Oscar?
It's nice to hear her, like, giving her opinion on people. Yeah, like, I feel like we don't get very much from her. So, like, hearing that she does have thoughts on the going-ons and stuff is nice.
Oscar is great in these episodes.
She seems to talk to Maria a little nicer in these episodes
not like her.
In the past.
As we find out, I don't think Oscar likes anybody in this room.
No! That's great. Yeah,
which
she's
is great.
Something else.
Love that. We cut to Marie talking with her aunts. She learns that Madame Dewberry was a former prostitute who worked her way into the nobility by marrying a noble and then killing him the next day. She now has seduced the king himself with her beauty. The aunts are like, yeah, and now our brother does whatever she wants. It sucks. She won't listen to, like, our daughters or anything. Marie, you should teach her a lesson by not acknowledging her at court.
I like. There's a line where she's like, what is a whore?
Yeah.
Like, oh, gosh.
Yeah. She's like, what does that mean? And they're like, she like,
I was like, what a line for a shoujo. Yeah.
Yeah. It's good. Yeah.
Maria. Scheming aunties.
Scandalized. Yeah. You could definitely tell that they just like don't like her. And that's why they're doing this. They don't really care that, like, the thing that's funny about this
just
is that
puppet.
Nobody really cares that she was like a countess or whatever the hell, like a former prostitute, like an escort, basically. They just don't like her.
Yeah. She's not very likable, but I can see why the emperor was into it.
Let's see. We see Madame Dewberry angrily knocking over some fruit. This is the first of many things she'll be knocking over in these next two episodes.
Yeah, a lot of temper tantrums.
Yeah, she's pissed that brat Marie wouldn't acknowledge her at court and smashes a mirror. King Louis walks in and is like, hey, good party, right? And Dewberry complains about Marie, but King Louis's like, it's been one day, all right? She probably just didn't know who you were, whatever. Dewberry commands her ladies-in-waiting to bring her every single one of Paris's top designers, and they're like, every single one? And she's like, yes, every single one, because she's going to look so dazzling at court that Marie can't ignore her. It's the next day, and Dewberry is wearing an enormous dress, and all the other ladies are impressed. It's, like, ridiculous.
I'm like, this doesn't look that different than what anyone else is wearing.
No, but it's got more, like, lace. It's got more,
like
frills.
I like the color scheme.
Yeah, the color scheme's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's just like really big and gaudy. All the other ladies are like, oh, it's so pretty, but Marie isn't there yet. Dewberry instead notices Oscar walking around. The ladies comment that Oscar is so dashing, but so cold and never talks to them. Oscar walks up to the now arrived Maria, and Maria is like, or asks her why she doesn't talk to anybody or dance. Like, she didn't dance at the party at all. Then Maria invites Oscar to come to her salon later with her, and Oscar tells her that she's a military officer and her job isn't to converse, it's to protect the royal family of France, and then she walks off. Maria is disappointed as they leave. While walking away, Andre's like, hey, Oscar, why'd you refuse to hang out with Marie? If you become friends with her, like, you'll definitely get promoted soon. And Oscar is incensed that Andre would even suggest that she do something so corrupt, and then scolds him.
Yeah, she definitely doesn't seem to like Oscar or Andre either. Like,
no, she likes Andre. I think she just, like, she hates the nepotism thing. And so she's like, how dare you even suggest I do that? Because I'm about honor. And he's like, well, bad news, we're in Versailles. But she has not learned this yet. This is where
it's
Andre
interesting
Oss
that he's
is.
Allowed to accompany. Like, what? Maybe is he ranked within the military as well, and that's why he gets to go to these fancy events?
He's probably like whatever counts as like her squire or something.
Yeah,
like her personal assistant, basically.
I guess so. He's cute.
Oh yeah, he's great. He's the only one who's like, you understand that all of this is corrupt, right? Like, you can't not be corrupt here, Oscar. We're at Versailles. But no, she does not understand that yet. Dewberry sees Marie. She tries to tell herself that Marie just didn't know who she was last time, and it wasn't anything personal. She tries to get everybody's attention, but Marie notices and draws them all back to her. Dewberry is incensed and decides that Marie is intentionally ignoring her. We cut to King Louis meeting with Dewberry. Dewberry complains that Marie is deliberately ignoring her. He's like, come on, she's like 14. Like, I'm sure this is nothing. Like, don't worry about it. He can't get into a fight with a 14-year-old. But Dewberry is like, no, this is like actually a serious thing, because if she doesn't acknowledge me, I can't like talk to her or do any courtly things. But King Louis just laughs. As Dewberry decides that she has to do something herself.
Can we talk about, is this the part where she like sees Maria just laughing, like the laugh is so grating yeah. to her. I'm like, oh my god, I feel the same way. Like yeah, I'd be haunted by
she's like that brat is laughing at too. Me. Yeah.
Okay, and then also, doesn't she like try to insult her by calling her a redhead?
Yes.
What is that?
I think this is something about like being blonde is like a virtue or something, like a desirable okay. thing. Well, and being like, I'm more blonde than you. You're not even blonde. You're like redheaded.
But she's not.
She's not. Okay. Even King Louis is like, Maria this doesn't even make sense. Stop saying this.
Then, yeah, it's what? I was like, what? Do we hate redheads? Like, I was like, this is such a weird insult.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I looked all this up. Everything in these last two episodes appears to have actually happened in real life. Anyway.
What the like showdown between.
Yeah, Dewberry is real. Okay. The ambassador from Austria showing up is also real in the next episode.
like, ooh, historically accurate.
Yeah, which is fascinating. Anyway, I guess this is the part of the manga that's supposed to be biographical, right? So, let's see. In the gardens of Versailles, Maria is greeting everybody, including Duke Orléans, which I thought was funny. like, oh yeah, he's just hanging out.
Yeah, she has no idea.
We see her again blatantly ignore Dewberry. Dewberry rushes off, smashing several busts on the way. We get some gossip that explains the power dynamics at play. Madame Dewberry is powerful right now because she controls the king, right? So she can, like, complain to him and get him to do stuff. However, Marie is going to be the future queen, so everybody has to pick a side and hedge their bets. Like, are you going to ally with the powerful person right now or the person that's going to be powerful in a couple of years? And everybody also wonders which side Oscar is going to take. We got to Oscar and Andre. Oscar is like, seems like all these nobles are freaking out over this. And Andre is like, yeah, it seems like it's a big deal. Whose side are you going to pick, Oscar? And Oscar tells him that she's just going to sit back and watch the fireworks. She's like, I'm just going to watch this all play out. We cut back to Dewberry, who has destroyed another room.
The property damage is insane.
yeah, she's like smashing so up crazy. Everything. It's so funny. A dark doorway enters Duke Orléans. She's like, what do you want? And he tells her that he thinks Marie's behavior has been irreprehensible, and he would like to see Dewberry outdo her because he has a plan. We cut to Andre rushing on horseback to the Jarget estate. He is here to deliver news that Madame Dewberry is going to make Oscar's mom, who's not dead, her lady-in-waiting. Oscar is like, shit, she's trying to force me to join her side. This sucks. I don't want my mom involved in all this stuff. Just like tell her no. Just tell her to refuse that job. But then General Jarget enters and tells Oscar that this is an order directly from the king, so they can't refuse. Oscar is horrified as we cut to credits.
Okay. This is a crazy introduction to the status of her mom. We thought she was dead. Probably died in childbirth. It's not like when she was born she was shown it all, and then she was like gazing at a portrait like she was dead.
Yeah, she really is like a fake out. Like, I really thought she was dead.
Yeah,
but then she's like, oh, your mom's gonna be made Madame Dewberry's personal assistant, and she's like, what? And then she's
like, she was just like, cool, raise our daughter as a like, she seems very passive, but
and, she seems, you know, super
her
chill.
Position does not allow her to be anything but that, but it's crazy. Also, like, surely she's too old to be a lady in waiting. Isn't that like for women like before they get married that are in high status, I would assume?
She's got, like, I guess.
Family to run. She doesn't have time to be hanging out with this lady.
Yeah.
Because Madame Dewberry lives in the palace and the Chargés live in their own estate. So is she like having to not live with her family anymore?
Yeah, I mean, like, this seems happening? Like, okay, so I'm looking at Lady in Waiting Wikipedia page. Historically, okay. In Europe, a lady in waiting is often a noble woman, but of lower rank than of the woman who she's attending. But she may either have or received a retainer or may not have received compensation for the services rendered. A lady in waiting was considered more of a secretary, courtier, or companion to her mistress than a servant. So I guess it's just like your crew.
Because I've always said, like, oh, I wish I had a lady in waiting because I just want someone to like brush my hair for me all the time. It'd be so relaxing.
Yeah. So it seems like this is an informal. Well, I mean, this one, it's a formal position here, but it is a formal position for other court ladies. So it doesn't seem so much as like, I assume the ones that are unmarried and the younger ones have to actually do like work. Whereas the older ones are just ones you hang out with, is my guess. But I don't know.
I had a few other notes for this episode I forgot to mention. Because there's like a scene where Madame Du Barry is like looking in the mirror and it's like tinted red. And I was like, look, who's a redhead now? Like, you look like you have red hair here. And then also she's like, oh, I just have to control the emperor. But I'm like, he literally just dismissed all your concerns. Do you have control over him? Like, he just keeps like laughing off everything she's presenting to him.
Uh-huh. She has about as much control of him as anybody else does, though. So
yeah. Oh man.
Yeah. So this is.
But yeah, biggest, craziest thing. Mom is alive.
Yeah. It's like a really funny
insane
reveal.
Insane. Want to roll into the next episode?
Yeah.
I really like the episode titles. They're very dramatic too. Mm-hmm. Digging it.
Yeah. Episode 4 is called Roses, Wine, and the Conspiracy. We open on a dramatic shot of like demonic crumbling statues. Then we jump to Marie and her aunts. They talk about how Du Barry is trying to make Oscar's mom her lady in waiting. And they're like, well, you just can't take this lying down, Marie Antoinette. And Marie is like, you're right. I'm going to ask the prince to make Oscar's mom my lady in waiting instead, as the OP plays. Afterwards,
okay, I was like, there's no way Oscar's gonna be cool with this. She's like, gonna be like, you're no better than her.
You don't like playing tug of war with her mom?
No, I don't think she's gonna like that. And Maria wants Oscar to like her, so I don't know what she is. She's a poppet for these aunties.
Well, I don't think nobody like knows Oscar, it seems like, because they'll be like, oh, it's great. Well, it's very funny, this next scene. Because
just assume Oscar hates everything.
Yeah,
you're safe.
After the OP plays, we cut back to a distraught Oscar. Granny is like, this is a good thing, actually. Like, your mom got a request from both Du Barry and Marie, and she gets to pick. Like, your mom's getting a huge promotion no matter what. And Oscar is like, yeah, but this isn't about my mom. This is about making me pick a side. Andre tells her that she was gonna have to pick a side eventually anyway, so she might as well do it now. But Oscar doesn't want to hear it. Her mom, who we see for the first time, who is not even blonde. I mean, I guess she's older now, so maybe she could have been blonde. But like, well, Lady Oscar is blonde, and her mom and is her not.
Her portrait that she gazed at was blonde.
Yeah, maybe she's just older, and so it like faded.
Well, normally it's like either when you're a child, your hair's super blonde, and it fades by the time you're like 12, or it just stays blonde forever. And I feel like that portrait, she was much older. So I mean,
this could not be her biological mom, right? Like, maybe her mom did die and this is like a second mom or something.
Well, I'm assuming we won't learn about that.
Yeah, we may not.
For a long time, matter. Then.
That's my guess. My guess is that this isn't her biological mom. That's my guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, we see her mom and her mom's like, listen, I'll go along with whoever you pick, dear. It's all the same to me, because she's just like so chill about this. Oscar is like, no, I'm not going to pick a side. And then she storms off and her parents are like, we're just going to let her cool her head. We cut to the palace in Vienna in Austria. Empress Maria Theresa is like, I'm getting a bad feeling that my daughter might be screwing everything up in France. And she decides to send Count Mercy, a man with an enormous mustache, to France to advise her.
Yeah, with how we saw her talking directly to her daughter, I imagine she doesn't have very much faith in her daughter's political savvy.
It's just very funny that she's like staring out the window and she's like, I felt a disturbance in the force that my daughter is screwing everything up.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Oh, it's very funny.
She knows what's up.
Yeah, she's totally right. I can see why she's empress.
Yes.
We jump back to Oscar, who's sulking. Andre shows up and offers to spar with her. While sparring, Andre is like, you know, Oscar, you're lucky that you have a mom to even fret over, unlike me, whose mom is dead. And he's like, just make a decision already. Like, you being like obstinate is like causing problems for everybody. And Oscar is like, yeah, but no matter who I pick, my mom's gonna suffer. I'm not doing that. And Andre retorts that, like, listen, the king ordered this, man. You can't, there's no getting out of it. You can't run away from this. He even like gave you a sweet deal where you could pick who she goes to. Like, you're being pretty ungrateful here, and your stubbornness is causing more problems for everybody.
Yeah, it's, she's very like self-centered. Oscar like doesn't even, yeah, it's
well,
she's a weird one.
The thing I like about this is that it's very clear Oscar believes in like merit and like doing things like a proper way. You know what I mean? And Andre is basically like, listen, this guy's the king and we just have to do whatever he says, whether it's stupid or not. Like, I don't think like you need to understand that we are being ruled by these people.
Well, yeah, I mean, merit is nice and all, but like by dragging her heels on things like that, it just makes it worse for everyone. For the people she supposedly is concerned about, it's like it'd just be better for everyone if you just went with the flow every once in a while.
Yeah, I mean, this is Andre's whole thing, where he's like, listen, I know you want to like be virtuous and not pick any sides, but you can't do that here. Like, that's not how this works. You can't just try to be apolitical here.
Yeah, we're on episode 4 and already twice she's like on the brink of being a traitor. So yes. It's like tumultuous.
Yeah. It's good.
Having someone Oscar's like that so be the head of your military. Crazy.
Yeah. Well, she's just the head of the Royal Guard, not the whole military.
Well, okay. That's true. Yeah.
Which is why she can still get promoted in the future. Oscar disarms him and thinks to herself that between the two, Dewberry is deceitful and Marie is at least from a proper lineage. So I guess she'd rather go with her. We get a voiceover saying that Oscar chose Marie, and we see Marie and Oscar's mom walking together with Oscar close in heel. Dewberry is pissed and rips apart her pearl necklace and runs away.
Okay, I thought for a second that her being like, oh, you're gonna regret that, your mom's in danger now, I thought she was like pulling her necklace apart so her mom would like slip on the pearl.
I thought that too. I was like, are we doing Mario Kart? This is so funny. We did not. It was just goofy.
It's insane that she's like acting like this in front of everyone.
Dude.
Not just her meltdown in her room, but like in front of everyone.
It's so good. I like how like so pissed off she is. While walking around, Marie recognizes Count Mercy. She fills him in on how cool it is to be the princess, and he's like, well, where's the prince? And she tells him that he's in his forge making locks, and Mercy is like, locks, like the thing you open with the key? And she's like, yeah, it's his hobby. And he's like, oh, okay.
Oh my god.
He's such a loser.
Such a,
I mean, yeah. Listen, that's kind of a cool hobby, to be honest. Like, that is like a cool thing. But this is what he does instead of like his job.
Ever presented the opportunity to like work in a forge and stuff. Like, I feel like that's something that would be so far removed from what they're doing at the palace. So I don't know.
I mean, I think they're gonna, this is like the prelude to like getting across the point that Louis the 16th was like absentee king.
Yeah.
Like, he was not there. He was not the guy up for the challenge.
This is a terrible match for, so both him and Marie are both like clueless and they're supposed to be the head of the country soon. That's troubling.
Yeah. Mercy overhears some gossip about what's really going on in the palace and is horrified to learn that Marie has picked a fight with the most powerful woman in France. He's like, if this goes bad, this can lead to war between Austria and France. We cut to Dewberry smashing more stuff up. She goes to the king, who's feeding himself grapes. He's like, you're here to complain about Marie again? This is nothing. I don't want to hear this. And then Dewberry tells him that by ignoring her, she can't be recognized at court. And she like follows him around as he like grimaces, trying to get away from his like wife. It's very funny. This is an incredible scene.
Yeah. I'm like, are you even getting any? Like, seems like she's more troubled than she's worth. I mean, we can't speak for the part that he brought her on board for, but
it's so funny.
She is so much.
God, she's just so hot, man. And he's been so lonely. It's been 2 years since his wife died.
Surely. Well, God. Like, so don't mess with the lady who just murdered her husband a day later and got away with it.
He
totally knows.
She did that.
Yeah.
There's no way he doesn't know that. It's so funny. Yeah, so he's like trying to leave, but she tells him that by ignoring somebody in his inner circle, Marie is basically insulting the king himself. And King Louis is like, what? Insulting me? That's outrageous. And he sends a warning to Marie because he's an idiot. He's so easily manipulated. I totally see how Dewberry is like in charge of everything. Oh my god. Marie, the ants, and Mercy all receive the warning. The ants are like, oh, you've got to stand your ground, Marie. While Mercy is like, dear God, this petty rivalry is going to lead to war. We cut to Empress.
So these ants are...
They're...
Actually her sister-in-laws?
They're King Louis.
Is that right?
They're King Louis' sisters.
Okay. Yeah, I guess they never talked to him, and this is like their only outlet to get at him. It's bizarre. How, well, like, I wonder what they behaved like when his wife was still around.
Yeah, because they don't hold a lot of sway necessarily, right?
Yeah. Are they triplet? They all look the same. Yeah. Like, are any of them married? Like, what's happening?
Mm-hmm. I'm sure they are. It's kind of surprising that they're all here, though, because you think they get married somewhere else and have to go there.
Yeah, so for like alliances with other countries. Yeah,
maybe they got married to like other nobles in France or something.
Maybe there's even more sisters.
Yeah, there was probably a lot.
Their father was cursed with daughters just like Oscar's.
That does tend to happen with royalty, I've noticed, which is very funny.
Yeah. Apparently. I feel like when I was researching stuff that like there were two others. No, I'm thinking of something else. What am I thinking of? That like maybe some sons passed in infancy or something. So there were sons, they just didn't make.
Yes. Yeah. That also happens a lot. Kids, like, you know, the mortality rate for children was pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they didn't have any kind of.
We're stronger. Superior.
That's because they didn't go outside.
That's
if
true.
You don't go outside, you can't get smallpox.
Yeah.
Let's see.
That's true.
We cut to Empress Maria Theresa getting a report from Mercy. Maria remembers that she was very clear when she taught her daughter about the indecency of prostitution, and she can't backtrack on that now, or Maria might think she's like a hypocrite and not listen to her. But also, this is like a really serious political matter, and she needs Maria to back down. So she orders Prime Minister Kunitz, to write the letter instead. She figures that if the letter comes from the prime minister, then Marie probably will listen to it, right? There's no way she would just totally ignore it.
I guess she'll just ignore her queen, but this dude somehow has more sway over her.
Yeah. We jump back to Versailles, where Mercy is reading Marie the letter from Kunitz. Marie is like, yeah, I understand. God, the prime minister is such a grouchy old man. Why do I have to listen to this guy? How did he even know any of this stuff was happening? Because she's an idiot. How did they know? Mercy, how did they know this was happening?
No. This guy from your country shows up, and now people in your country somehow know things are happening.
She's such an idiot. It's the next day, and everybody is gossiping about the king's warning. They think that this is it. No, there's no way Marie will deny the warning, and she's going to acknowledge Dewberry today. Dewberry thinks to herself that she was a commoner that rose through the ranks, so there's no way she's going to lose to some brat. She knows how to win political fights, and the riches of France will be hers, she also declares. Marie thinks to herself that if she addressed Dewberry, then she's acknowledging prostitutes and mistresses at court, and her morals cannot allow that. Marie and Dewberry meet face to face, and Dewberry waits for Marie to acknowledge her. But after a few moments, it becomes clear that Marie is not going to do that. She just stares at her. Everybody is horrified, and in a rage, Dewberry snaps her fan in half and runs off. Dewberry rushes into a room and tears some bedsheets. From the shadowy doorway, the Duke Orleans appears again, and he tells her to calm down. He's brought a gift, some wine, and she's like, what is this normal-ass wine you have? And he says, yes, it is normal-ass wine. However, it is laced with a deadly, undetectable poison. Surely somebody of Madame Dewberry's caliber could find some use for it. We cut to Oscar's mom reading a book. She gets a visit from another lady-in-waiting who tells her that Marie has ordered her to bring her some wine to Madame Dewberry's quarters for her and Madame Dewberry. And Oscar's mom is like, well, that makes no sense. This is incredibly suspicious. But the woman tells her that it's an order from the king, so she has to do it.
Ugh, God. She needs to rat this maid out after the fact.
This plan is so funny because it's so obvious to everybody, but they just have to do it anyway. And her mom is just like, well, that is like doesn't make any sense. Oscar's mom brings the wine to Dewberry. Her mom is like, oh, where's Marie Antoinette? We brought glasses for both of you. And Dewberry very dramatically and like way overacting tells her that Marie has left. We cut to Andre rushing over to Oscar to tell her that her mother has gone to Dewberry's apartment to bring her wine. And Oscar is like, well, this is obviously a trap, and rushes off. Back in Dewberry's apartment, she's like, well, we shouldn't let this second glass of wine go to waste, and tells another one of her ladies that she can have it. The girl is excited and takes the glass. She takes a swig and dies immediately. Dewberry is like, poison! You've poisoned this glass! Why have you tried to poison me, Lady Jarjays?
Goodness.
It's ridiculous.
The acting is phenomenal.
Yeah. Just then, Lady Oscar bursts into the room and sees the dead woman. Oscar's like, are you serious? You killed your own servant for this obvious setup? And Dewberry's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And Oscar says that this is the most obvious trap. You've clearly poisoned this to yourself to, like, set my mother up. She throws the glass through the window, and then she draws her sword and points it at Dewberry, saying that everyone here just gonna forget what happened, and as long as she's here, Dewberry is not gonna lay a finger on her mother or Marie Antoinette.
Man. Dewberry, see, she's like forcing Oscar's hand to be against her. If she just chilled the hell out, it wouldn't be this bad.
Dewberry collapses, my defeated, God, while Oscar and her mom leave as we cut to credits. This is so funny. Oscar is like, listen, you might have the king's ear, but I have a sword right now.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I'm trying to think. I mean, it seems like he doesn't care that much about Madame Dewberry. I feel like if she just killed her, it, you know, like, it'd be like, oh, she did this thing.
No, I feel like he cares.
I feel like so many people would be fine to, like, dismiss it.
Yeah, because this whole thing is stupid, right? I mean, the thing that is great about this episode, and, like, these episodes, which are great, is that, like, this shows off so well how, like, petty nonsense fights that ordinarily just, like, wouldn't matter in real life amongst, like, powerful nobility become massive problems for everybody beneath them.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the king doesn't give a shit about this dispute in the same way that Oscar doesn't at the beginning, except the king can continue not to care because it'll never affect him, while Oscar suddenly has to care because she's getting dragged into it.
Yeah.
And it's great.
Can we talk about whenever she's sparring with Andre, the, like, speed at which they're dashing around? Like, they're moving so fast. They gotta be traveling miles with how much they're, like,
yeah, they're into it.
Running, the little running scenes where there's just the stills, but the running sound. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. Also, I feel like it's pretty,
this is crazy.
I feel like the way Oscar fights very often is to get pushed back and then counter, because usually she's getting pushed back, right? But it seems like she's doing that on purpose.
That seems like a good strategy.
Yeah,
because that's what the dude would assume that would happen if they were fighting anyway. So just use that to her advantage.
Yeah. So I just noticed that that's the way she fights, which is interesting. Yeah. I like these episodes a lot.
Yeah, it was very wasn't as much about Oscar at first. And I guess learning more about Marie Antoinette and how susceptible to persuasion and pressure she is.
Oh, yeah. I feel like Marie comes off very poorly in these episodes.
Yeah. And Madame Dewberry just, like, unhinged. Like, anything you say to her is going to result in, like, damage to something.
I mean, the thing is that, like, yeah, she's like, Madame Dewberry's unhinged where she's constantly breaking shit all the time, right? But on the other hand, like, not being acknowledged at court is a big deal for her. Like, this isn't a, like, I'm saying this whole thing is petty, but it is, there are actual stakes for her not being acknowledged at court, right? And that's the thing she tries to tell King Louis about, and he just ignores, basically, because he's like, yeah, whatever. But that is, like, a real consequence for her that I think is interesting.
I feel like she should just be grateful for what, how far she's come, and, like, not care. I don't know.
Yeah, like, I mean, again, you know, it's all about each other's egos and stuff, right? I mean, this is where it's like, I mean, this is the thing that comes along, and the thing that I'm happy about with this show is that, like, I was kind of worried that this, where we were going to be, like, fawning over the, like, luxury of the nobility. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know, like, what this position of the show was going to take in terms of, like, what Marie Antoinette is like, what all the royals of, and, you know, I know that the author is, like, from the New Left or whatever, but it's like, you know, this was supposed to be a biography or biographical in some ways, right? And I think it comes off very negative about all of these guys.
Well, yeah, basically it's like these petty things between royals, it just has an impact that it wouldn't for that affects everyone.
Yeah.
Can you explain the left wing movement? I guess
the new left in Japan from a while ago.
Yeah.
I don't know any details about it. You want just like a, I mean, they're going to be leftists, right? So they're going to not like the nobility.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I wasn't sure like at that point in time how influential the like Japanese royalty would have.
So like, you mean like the emperor of Japan and that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
I mean, it was very powerful during Imperial Japan, got basically completely neutered after the U.S. reforms the Japanese government. I mean, it's still around and there is like, you know,
just more figurehead now.
Yeah, it's basically a figurehead now, kind of the ways that most remaining monarchs are.
Okay.
I assume the new left has something to do more with like communism and being close with the USSR or something. Because that's like it would have been the 60s. So that would have been like the player in the relationship.
Gotcha.
But yeah, but like I do like how it's not going to be fawning over the royalty here. It's going to portray these guys like assholes who create problems for everybody.
Yes.
And like don't realize they create problems for everybody, but think they're doing something really important. Right. Like, the whole thing with Marie Antoinette is she's just like, oh, well, we can't acknowledge is like a prostitutes and mistresses because I was taught that those are bad. And like everybody around her being like, listen, you were supposed to like, yeah, you were taught this stuff is bad, but you're supposed to not care. We're supposed to all be hypocrites here. OK, you can't be going around actually doing things with morality or like following your morals. You're supposed to be doing Machiavellian power politics here. Which is
well, also like, girl, this is a different country and the rules have been set before you got here, and I guess you're not technically queen yet.
Oh yeah, well, the power like immediately goes to her head.
Herself.
Yeah,
yes,
where she's like, I'm if the queen's dead, I'm basically the queen of France. It's like, no, you're not.
Yeah, hold your horses.
So, I think it's great. I like how Oscar is like, well, this is stupid. And then she gets involved and she's like, well, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to me.
I'm also just interested to see if like the show at some point like makes Maria more likable and like a friend of Oscar's, or if she's just going to continue to be like a thorn in Oscar's side that Oscar has to learn to navigate the relationship with.
Yeah.
And like how much will be politics versus like if we start getting into the French Revolution, how much will be focused on like managing that?
Mm-hmm.
I am interested to see where we go with this show and like the whenever we do get like at what will happen. And then we cut to a time skip.
Yeah.
Will be interesting to see.
Also, I just want to say, I think Madame Du Barry rules. I think it's incredibly funny that she's like, I was just like a cool courtesan. And then I married a guy and killed him. And then I became like, she's like, I'm just a commoner. I made my way up here. I should rule everything. And I'm like, well, you know, you are more qualified than everybody else here. You're more qualified than Marie Antoinette. That's for sure.
Yeah. I feel like she's just gonna be the cartoony villain.
Oh,
imagine the show isn't gonna explore her.
No. I mean, she's setting up to get owned, right? Like, because I mean, even Duke Orleans gave her that wine, and she executed the worst plan of all time. He probably knew that. Like, he probably knew that she's an idiot. I'm trying to see, like, what is the Duke trying to do?
If she's so obvious, I wouldn't like want to associate with her with my name. Like, if she gets caught, she's just going to throw me under the bus immediately. Like, she seems like a liability to incorporate into your plans.
Well,
or at least through yourself.
Well,
with your face and name. And
I think the difference here is that she doesn't have an official position, right? So it would be her word against Duke Orleans, a guy who has actual power. So I don't think he risks very much by teaming up with her, right? Because he could just dismiss her immediately.
Yeah. I guess so.
Which I think is pretty good.
Is he in the military or the royal
guard? Yes, he is. Yeah. He's the cousin. Okay. He's
So Oscar is his superior.
No.
No?
You Corleone, the Duke?
Well, I mean, like, within the military.
He's not in the military.
Or within the... Sorry, I keep saying that. The Royal Guard. She's
Duke Corleone isn't in the Royal Guard.
Within that... You just said... I thought I just asked if he was, and you said no.
Oh, no, I said he's royalty.
Oh, okay. He's not in...
No.
Okay.
He's the Duke of a place. He's, like, that's his job.
The Emperor... Or, sorry, the King and, like... His son, they don't carry weapons on them, do they?
No.
Okay, because like Duke Orleans just immediately like killed that person disguised as Marie. So I thought that was.
Yeah, I mean, so like what often happens is like upper class people or like, you know, nobility will buy positions in the military, like officer positions, and they usually won't actually serve anywhere important. Because they're just buying ceremonial stuff. And maybe like that wouldn't surprise me if Duke Orleans did that. But he would have bought that in the military, not the Royal Guard, because that would be weird if you signed up to guard yourself.
That's true. OK,
so they sometimes do that. I don't know if he did that. And because this he's like kind of isn't a real guy.
Yeah. OK, well,
yeah,
well, I guess he's the main bad guy. So
yes.
Or like the stakes of him being bad versus Madame Du Barry are different.
Yeah. Well, it seems like this arc is not over, right? It seems like the next episodes are still going to be dealing with this.
Yes.
And so I'll be interested to see what he gets away with. Like, what was his real plan here? Because obviously it wasn't this, right? Mm-hmm. And also, like, he doesn't really care about Marie Antoinette. I mean, that's not really... He was trying to stop the wedding before to, like, cause a stir. It seems like he's just trying to stir things up. So we'll see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Having to adapt the game plan. Because I'm assuming it's going to be a lot of like Oscar foiling his plans, and how long will it take Oscar to put the pieces together? Oscar seems sharp. Is she going to be able to realize? And then it's just going to be a debate of like, oh, he's, you know, in a higher position, so I can't just make accusations. And like, how would I actually go about like exposing him?
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be difficult for Oscar to do. Now. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm liking it a lot. I'm good.
Cricket, stop with the squeak toy, girl. We're almost done here. Oh, okay. Well, yeah, so I guess that's what we've got this week with the show. I did want to say thank you, because I know on Spotify, at least, we've gotten a few more ratings.
Oh yeah.
You know, you can't leave a written review, but we have gotten a few more ratings. So I did want to shout out those folks who did that. Much appreciated. Gives us a good pep in our step that people are listening and you know, listening, engaged enough to leave a rating. So
yes, we appreciate
definitely it. Appreciate that.
Thank you. And anybody else listening who hasn't done that yet, you can rate us 5 stars on your podcast platform of choice. You can do it in Spotify. That's great. You can do it in Apple Podcasts. And if you do it there, you can leave a review, which helps us for the algorithm, that helps discoverability and other things like that. And another thing that helps us out is you can post about us on social media. State of social media. There are some good ones out there. You can post about us there. You can also tell your friends and people you know to please listen to us. It really helps us out. We like making this show, and we want to engage more people in it and convince more people to watch The Rose of Versailles, a show that we are liking pretty well so far. So please do that.
Yep. All right. Let's see. What have we learned?
What have we learned?
Don't put fragile objects in the room of a temperamental person. Don't have anything.
What did we learn here?
They'll just get destroyed by others.
You should go to Versailles. No, I don't know. Who learned something? I mean, Marie should have learned. So I don't think she learned anything. I don't think anybody learned anything. She should have.
Dumbass. Let's see.
If you're gonna execute a plot,
you know what? Nope, you go.
If you're gonna try to set up somebody poisoning you, maybe like think about your setup a little bit more and not make it so obvious that this is what's gonna happen. And also, don't involve as many people.
Especially if everyone already talks about you having poisoned someone in the past, maybe change it up.
Yeah, that's,
I know, like, I didn't poison's think about a that. Woman's weapon, blah blah blah. Yeah. But like, you know, it's too easy.
Yeah, that's too much. You're right. I didn't even think about that. It's so obvious. Everybody clocks it immediately.
And if you make keys as a hobby and you just got married, like, make a cute little key and lock for your new wifey.
Is that cute?
That's like for her heart, and you have the key to her.
Oh, okay.
Heart or something.
Uh huh.
I don't know if that's all he's got going on. He's got to make it work more than just be hidden away from.
He does not seem
everything.
Like he has much of anything going on.
You think they've consummated their marriage?
Probably.
I doubt it. You think?
I think they're supposed to after you get on your like wedding day or whatever.
Well, yeah. I don't know if the French did the whole, like, let's everyone watch them do it thing.
I don't think they did that. Not in the show.
I feel like I would think Maria would have been not. I feel like we would have seen something about it, but maybe we're just not going to address that those things happen.
Yeah, you're probably not just in like this, like, kind of
Oscar
kid
was born
show.
Without a mother.
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. On that note, thank you all for listening and supporting us. And we will catch you guys next time with more coverage of the super dramatic show.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Next time.
Bye.
Two more eps.
Next time on Shoujo. Thank you.